Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done something. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. Happy Friday. Thank you for everybody for checking us out. We got a big show for you. We're going to do our picks and props because that's what we do on Friday.
No doubt.
Some winners out there. We're going to break down the NBA Conference Finals as they're right in the thick of everything. It's Friday, so we're going to do our five-star Q&A. We got some good questions from our bench warmers.
Good ones?
Out there. Yeah. I think they are. I think there's some strong ones that are out there. But first, before we get to the NBA, we're going to play a memory game, too. I'm looking forward to that, Debo has cooked up for us. So I don't know what that's...
That's cool. I actually watched Game Night last night, so I'm fired up.
Yeah. I heard that movie was pretty good.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah. All right, so but first, before we get to that, so yesterday I was trying to track you down.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get you on to my radio show and have you as a guest.
That's right.
And I didn't hear a text back, which is odd, because you're pretty good, like, text back guy.
Yeah.
You're pretty quick. And I get the text, and it says, sorry, I was at the casino with my grandma.
Yeah.
Like, that was not the text I was expecting to get.
Right.
Did you guys do all right?
No.
No?
So it was a rainy...
What game were you playing?
It was a rainy day, and, like, my grandmother comes down. She's 91, God bless her, nanny. And she loves to be at the casino playing slots. And I'm not a slot guy. Like, I like the live gaming when I go, but I don't gamble a lot. You know.
Right.
So, but yesterday, we had nothing to do, and my family's out of town. My kids are in New York and my other son's on his field trip. So I was like, I'm going to take my mom who loves to gamble and my grandma. And we went over to a local casino and I played slots with them. Yeah. For like 3.5 hours.
Sat and pulled the lever.
Just sat and you don't even pull the lever anymore. You just hit the button.
That's right.
So I sat and hit a button and watched like videos on my phone for like 3.5 nice. Hours.
Next time you go, you got to hit me up because I do like to gamble.
Do you? All right.
Yeah, I won't pass up.
We actually had a good time. It was a good time.
I'll be like, hey, babe, I got to go meet Rajah's family. Tell her stories about
you. You're always welcome, bro. Always
welcome.
All
right, very cool. All right, so the NBA playoffs, they're in the thick of things. We've got maybe a series on our hands with the Rockets-Warriors because game two went much better for the Rockets. They actually go out and pretty much finish them off. It wasn't even close. It looked different to me, although Mike D'Antoni said, nope, it was pretty much the same game plan. But the Rockets look better. I'm curious to hear from you the reason why it looked so different.
It looked different. Well, first of all, Mike is right. It was the same thing. They just did it with more of a purpose. And we kind of touched on it on the last pod. Like, the ISO situation was the same. They just didn't take 5, 6, 7 seconds to get into the ISO. And all of that extra time getting into your ISO allows people to kind of load to the ball, which means the defenders behind the man guarding the ball are able to kind of get in position to do what they need to do to help support that. What they did was they broke you down off the dribble in the initial ISO, swung the ball, and instead of holding it, the next guy who caught it either swung it really quick or made his mind up to drive the ball. When you get multiple drives on guys that are closing out at you, guys that are running you off of three-point shots because they're really good shooters, that the soft underbelly of that zone becomes exposed, or that defense. And that's what they did. They just made their mind up when the ball got swung that they were going to attack off the bounce quicker and more deliberately than they did in game one. And it had Golden State on their heels the whole game.
All right, so I have a couple reasons, my theories, okay?
Uh-huh.
The first one being, and you've said this a lot, that the role players play better when they're at home. That's why it was so shocking that they didn't do much in game one while they were in Houston.
Right.
But it was those role players. When you had Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker combined for 68 points in game two, going 12 of 18 from three-pointer, like from the three-point line, that's the difference in the game.
Of course.
The second one, I still think the series is a wrap. I think this is the game the Warriors got sloppy. They don't really care. They kind of let their guard down.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because Steph Curry talked about it after the game. He said they made shots. We were just a step slow on our rotations and our switches. Guys got into the paint. We know their MO is isolation, trying to get dribbles, get the ball in the paint. We've got to respond with some more aggressiveness and more discipline on the defensive end. I think this is the game the Warriors just didn't show up. They did it against the Spurs. They were up 3-0, and then they just laid an egg. They did it against the Pelicans. They were up 2-0, laid an egg, got beat by 20. This was that game for the Warriors to me, the one where they just kind of like just don't care.
Spoken like a true Warriors supporter. But no, I mean, there could be something to be said for that. When I watched them play, it didn't look like they came out and laid an egg.
Right.
It didn't look like they weren't there to play. It looked like they got beat. And the Warriors have had limited success against the Rockets this year. Now, they've had people injured here and there, but the Rockets have the type of guys. The Warriors don't have great defenders. I mean, KD is an underrated defender. Klay Thompson's a good defender. Draymond, I mean, they have some, but at the point when you could get like Steph Curry in ISO situations, like there's some real gaping holes in what they want to do defensively. You have to find them, and then you have to have the type of pieces that can expose that. And I thought that Houston did a really good job of finding them. What Houston also did was, even though they ISO'd about the same amount of time, it wasn't all James Harden in the ISO.
Right.
They got the ball to Chris Paul's hands. In the first game, it felt like a lot of people were just standing around watching James Harden dance on the ball. And it didn't allow other people to kind of get involved, which supports, you know, your point about when you get those role players scoring like that, you're going to be much better off. And so they split those ISOs between James Harden and Chris Paul. And then, you know, I think the debate is hilarious about whether you make an adjustment versus whether you don't make an adjustment.
Right.
Like, of course you make an adjustment. You might not change who you are, like the DNA of the way you play, but all of those guys made some kind of adjustment because they came out and they played better.
Right. So you had, and on the flip side, so the Warriors, the team that was off, their role players didn't play very well. I mean, they don't really have, they have superstars. I guess all their superstars didn't play great. When you look at Steph Curry, only had 15. He looked a little bit off. Do you, like, when you see Steph Curry struggling on both sides, because he's getting abused off defensively too, and they're going after him, what are you seeing when you see his game?
So I listened yesterday. I heard a lot of people theorize about, you know, him being injured still and not being 100%. I don't think he's injured. I saw him offensively when he has the ball and those guys are kind of getting up in him and taking away his three. He looks fine. He's able to bounce past his man and get to the rack and finish and so I don't see any lingering effects of the injury. Now, you could make a case that he's not at 100%, like in terms of conditioning and so on and so forth, although I don't know that I'd believe that either, but you could make that case. I think Houston, what they're doing, and they're doing a good job of it, and it's what I would do to any big-time megastar like that, is I'd be as physical as I could be with them. And some guys it would affect more than others just because of their stature. Mm-hmm. And Steph isn't the biggest guy in the world. And so they're throwing a lot of bodies at him. So when he beats his man off the bounce and he gets into the paint and he's finishing like some really tough finishes, yeah. But guess where he's got to get up from? He got to get up from the floor. Like, they're putting him into the stanchion. They're putting him into the first row. He's on the ground. They're physically like taking a toll on him right now. It's a lot of touches, if you will, on Steph Curry's body. And I think that's having an effect on him.
See, I think Steph Curry is the type of guy who in the regular season goes off because the defense isn't as great. And right. I think there's a very specific reason why his numbers deteriorate in the postseason. It's because the intensity level goes up. Guys are more willing to take contact. And they're just going to be more likely to get that hand in the face.
Right.
Like,
yeah, no. Yeah.
Not like the players. Like, remember Barkley and all the old-timers were like, oh, Steph could never do this in the 90s, you know, because we played more physical basketball.
Right.
Like, I always looked at it and said, if you can shoot, you can shoot. But I don't think he would be as dominant back then as he is now in the regular season, because I think you even see him drop off in the postseason.
Yeah, it's a different brand of basketball. The brand of basketball in the playoffs is more likened to the brand that they played back then, where you can be physical. You see the refs swallowing the whistle. You know, it's funny to me, the NBA says that it doesn't change. Of course it changes. Like, your eyeballs will look at a game in the playoffs and be, that's really physical, you know, and they don't always let that happen in the regular season. So there is something to be said for that. And again, Steph's build isn't one that is best suited for that style of play, if you will.
Right.
He can still navigate through it. He's one of the best players on the planet. But over the course of time, if you're going to let, you know, the PJ Tuckers, the Trevor Arizas, the Luke Mbamutes, even Chris Paul, who's a tough little, like, solid dude, if you're going to let them beat up on Steph, knock him to the floor, bump him around on screens, if that's got to be his life night in and night out, his numbers probably are going to dip a bit.
Yeah. I mean, he needs to have a better game to kind of, you know, yeah. And going back, you would see him at Oracle should play much better, because it's the first time in his career he's made one or fewer three-pointers in consecutive playoff games. So we'll see if he gets back his form. All right. Our other Eastern Conference Finals, Celtics-Cavs. This Celtics team has been the surprise of the postseason, but is it time we look at them and say, all right, this is just a really talented team, than just saying, oh, this is improbable or unlikely?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes, and I mean, they can still be a surprise, because I don't know who saw this coming. Like, most Boston fans didn't see this coming. You know, when Gordon went down, we were all surprised that they were leading the East at one point, and then Kyrie goes down, and I think everybody just chalked it up. But you know, they've got a lot of guys on that team that were high draft picks. I mean, they like Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum, Al Horford's been a 5-time All-Star. Like they have accomplished players with a good mix of young talent. And you know, I think what gets lost in the shuffle with Boston, if I'm being honest, is, you know, we talk about Brad Stevens and how good he is. We talk about all these young players and how good they are. And we kind of forget about Danny Ainge, like, and the staff of evaluators that they have there and skill development, like their player development staff. They really find the right pieces, number one. They go out and get them. And number two, they develop them. And so it's a really good team. And I said it the other day, aside from LeBron, like, tell me if you're picking a team, right, and the pool of players is from both of these two teams, like, who's your number two? And I'm going to ask you, like, if you're LeBron, clearly LeBron is going to be number one.
Yep.
And
probably
you got
Tatum.
Probably Jason Tatum. Yep. Who would be number three?
Probably Terry Rozier. No, Horford.
Horford?
Yeah.
Who would be number four?
All right. You're going down a lot.
No, you are. And so at some point, Kevin Love's going to sneak in there.
Right.
But I would take...
Probably right there.
I would take Jason Tatum and Al Horford, and I'd probably take Jaylen Brown before Kevin Love going forward right now.
Right.
You understand? Absolutely. And so, I mean, you're talking about a team that, yeah, we've got LeBron on the Cleveland side. But, man, if you've got the next 2, 3, 4 best players, and then there's Kevin Love, and then there are more Celtics.
Right.
So the Celtics are good.
Yeah. No, and I think it's at that point, because I always, when you have the conversation in sports, like, some things are said so much that you're like, all right, let's tone it down just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like we're at that point with Brad Stevens? Because I feel like he's talked about as he's the next Red Auerbach. Like, the way we talk about him is he's going to win 10 championships.
Right.
And, you know, have this incredible run. He's a good coach, but I'm like, let's slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
not to take any away credit from him, but I feel, you know what I mean? Like, it goes, there's always a point when you get a proper amount of due, and then it's,
yeah,
like, you get put in
you're over the top
next category. Like, I said, oh, he's the Bill Belichick of the NBA.
Why hasn't won anything?
Like, exactly. Yeah, that's right? Kind of my point.
So, yeah, to that point, like, yeah, I think we do need to pump our brakes. I mean, clearly he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
And he gets his guys to buy in. He gets them to buy into, you know, whatever the philosophy is he's preaching. The next man up mentality is clearly in place there. They're not afraid of anyone. They don't quit on him ever in a game, which is huge when you see teams. So there's a lot of good there. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't won anything. And I think, you know, if you hear some of the older NBA coaches, some of, like, the lifers, like, they resent the fact that he gets all of this attention.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of
resentment.
Which
may be the reason why he wasn't voted the NBA, or didn't get a vote in the NBA Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Because they're probably a little bit
a little.
Probably like, you know what? He does have a lot of talent on that roster.
A little backlash. Yeah, and you know, the proof for him will be in the pudding over the next few years when they got a healthy roster. And right now, it's easy to kind of – sometimes it's easy to preach the, like, we're playing with house money thing.
Right.
Like, you know, we got nothing to lose. Let's roll it out there. Let's go. Like, sometimes it's a little – it's the hunter versus the hunted thing all the time, you know?
So I have what I think is a lock of the week. I don't even know if we're doing this pick in our picks and props.
Yeah.
But I think Cleveland, going back home
– What's it, 6?
It's 6.5. Uh-huh. I think they blow them out. I think they win by at least 10. I think this is one of those desperate, and, you know, we heard Steve Kirk talk about it after game two. He's like, hey, one team was more desperate than the other. I think
right.
We're going to see a desperate Cavs team come out and play with an incredible effort. They've coming off 3 or 4 or 5 days rest because of the, you know, this gap.
Yep.
Ron's going to be healthy. He's going to have 40 plus. Like, I think that's the lock of the week for me.
You know, I could,
and I'm not saying the series, I'm just saying this particular game, I think the Cavs have to get.
Look, pulling for a good series. Cause I want to see a good series. Then
too.
I hope you're correct.
Yep.
Boston has, what are they? Owen, I don't know, something in the playoffs on the road.
Right.
They've won a game on the road.
They've struggled on the road.
Which, like, if the trend continues, like, I'm with you. The only thing is, I think at some point, like, the way that bunch operates mentally, like, and their mentality of, like, us against the world, they just seem to have a real chip. They're going to want to get over that.
Yeah.
And so I think you could see a very, very fired up Celtics squad that comes out and really battles with Cleveland in game 3. I don't know that they get blown out. They may. The Cavs backcourt's just been, like, it's
well, see, that's when, and you always say, and you're usually right, is that when they're going to go back, like you're going to see a Kyle Korver feel much more comfortable. Hopefully J.R. Smith finds his three-pointer. You know, yeah. He's been atrocious. You're going to see some of those secondary players give you a lot more, and they've been atrocious.
Yeah, for the Cavs' sake and for NBA like playoff viewing,
yeah.
Basketball viewing, yeah, yeah. I hope you're right.
Me too.
I really do.
All right, so I teased a little bit. We have a memory game, and this is basically an ode to LeBron James because of his little speech that he gave when he recalled every play in that 7-0 run. Which, woo, quit an hour earlier. So Debo's cooked up a little something for us. What do you have, Debo?
I have some questions for you guys. I want to see if your memory, it's been a couple decades, actually, for some of these with you, Danny. Raja, about a decade. Some as recent as 6 years ago. The first one we got, November 3rd, 2003. This one for you, Danny. Okay. You make your first career start for the Broncos. Not your first career, but your first one with the Broncos. On Monday night against the Patriots and Tom Brady, you threw for 163 yards and one touchdown. Who caught that touchdown pass?
Oh, who caught the touchdown pass? All right, I remember the play was like a little play action, so it was a running back. I'm going to guess Mike Anderson.
Mike Anderson.
He's our member of the salute to the troops.
You are correct.
Hey!
Only I remember that was because of the play.
I have a bonus question with that. Who picked you off in that game?
Ooh.
Pretty big name.
Not Teddy Bruschi. It wasn't Teddy.
A corner in his rookie season.
Rodney
Harrison.
Asante Samuel.
Asante Samuel.
I think he's a local guy, too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is.
That punk. Ball was tipped. All right, next up, what do you got?
Of course, Raja, this one we've talked about, one of my favorite childhood memories. Game 7, 2001, Eastern Conference Finals versus the Bucks. Raja, you only played 9 minutes, but how many points did you score in those 9 minutes?
Oh, that's a good one. 10?
Correct.
Bam.
Yes.
10.
Yeah.
That efficiency.
Yeah, I think it was we had a 3. We had a dunk. We had an and one. That would have given me 8. And then I don't remember.
Look at that. You're going back like LeBron.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bonus I had was on how many field goal attempts.
Oh, FGAs?
Yeah.
Let's see. I wasn't getting a lot up back then. All right. I had the swipe steal that led to the two-hander. I had LeBron. The
three
out of the
memory.
Corner. The and one, I went by Irving Johnson. Irvin Johnson, yes, right. Big Irvin to center. I would say probably 5 FGAs.
You were 4 for 6 from the
six.
Oh.
Hey. All right.
Ron Ray was, Allen at all?
Again,
yeah, I played Ray. Ray was getting a lot of them up. I was just there like trying to be a shadow.
All right, Danny, your next one. Your rookie season, 1996. So I don't want to bring this up, but I'm going to. The first 4 passes of your career were incomplete. 2 of those targets were intended for the same guy. You got to give me 2 of those 3 intended targets.
All right. One of them was Chris Callaway.
Yep.
One of them was Amani Toomer.
Nah.
Oh. Lawrence Dossie.
The other 2. Howard Cross
and tenant.
Thomas Lewis.
Thomas Lewis, the fastest guy who couldn't catch a cold. he was a former first-round pick, and Giants fans couldn't stand him.
He couldn't catch a cold.
So that ball hit him in the chest. He just dropped it?
Yes.
Sorry,
exactly.
Coach.
Same deal. They were props.
Bonus question here. Who was the first completion of your career, too?
Chris Callaway?
Tyrone Wheatley for a whopping -3 yards.
Wow. He was a running back out of Michigan, right?
It was definitely a screen that like got busted up by the defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. He was another guy that Giants fans thought was a total bust. I loved him. He was great, but he was hurt all the time. He just had a rough go of it injury-wise.
That sucks.
All right. So both of you have answered one correctly. Raja, this is your second opportunity. The final game of your career that you played actually on the court, you sat out the postseason with the Jazz.
Yep.
Who was that against?
Oh, that was in Philly against the Sixers.
Not according to my research.
Oh,
dang!
He said it was such confidence.
I know. I just knew it.
April 26th, 2012, against the Portland Trailblazers.
In Utah or in Portland?
In Utah.
In Utah.
And here's the bonus for you. You're starting five that game with Utah. Can you remember it? You weren't included.
Paul Millsap?
No. Rough start.
Oh, so okay, so they were resting like him and Al Jefferson. We probably already made the playoffs.
Al Jefferson in there. I'll give you a hint.
Al Jefferson was in there?
Yep.
Oh my God, I don't know. Devin Harris?
Yes.
Alec Burke?
No. We'll finish it. Your
Gordon Hayward.
Your old Rook, Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
Amari Carroll. And Derek Favors.
D. Fave. Those were some good. We had a good young group of guys, man. That was pretty cool.
Nice. All right, so we
both
so we
one okay. for two. This is your last one. We'll make it competitive because why not?
I feel why not? Actually, you had a tough one. No, remembering your receivers,
right.
Yeah, you had a tough
right.
one.
Week two, 1999. Danny is with the Atlanta Falcons in his first season with the Falcons. You're playing the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. You got to get this within 2 minutes, but when did you enter the game? You didn't start. You were the backup to start, but came in. When did you come in?
I'm going to say 6 minutes left in the game.
No, you came in earlier than that. It was a rough go.
Yeah.
A minute five left in the third quarter.
Really? All right. So
but
I got,
you still got up burn. Like 24 passes in the last 16 minutes of the game.
Gunslinger.
Yeah, it was ugly. I think it was not a good performance there. That was on Monday Night Football. Jamal Anderson got hurt. He tore his ACL in that game. The whole team was like down in the dumps.
That sucks.
And we got worked in Dallas.
Raja, your opportunity to win it here, the last one. Within 2 minutes again, at what point in the game did you clothesline Kobe?
It was second half.
Nobody punks Rajab.
8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
You're within that 2 minute time frame.
Oh.
22 seconds off. It was 7:38 remaining in the fourth quarter.
In the fourth quarter,
Rajab is our winner.
Yes,
that takes the title. All right, but neither one of us, I don't think, are scaring the broad title of memory genius.
With the playback.
Oh, exactly. All right, let's do some take it or leave it.
Okay,
take it or leave it.
First up. This has gotten me into a little bit of trouble on Twitter. Not trouble, but a lot of my timeline has been absolutely wrecked by SEC fans and specifically Alabama fans. They are not happy with me because Nick Saban had a comment and he was talking. Somebody asked him about UCF. That's my squad.
Yeah.
The UCF, Orlando, O-Town, for their undefeated claim on the national title. Nick Saban was asked about it. He said, I guess anybody has the prerogative to claim anything, but self-proclaimed is not the same as actually earning it. And there's probably a significant number of people who don't respect people who make self-proclaimed sort of accolades for themselves. All right. I'm leaving this all day. I think this was really messed up for Nick Saban. I think it was petty
right.
for him to even go after UCF, who doesn't have anywhere near the facilities, the money, the athletes, the five stars, any of it. Why do you care about UCF and them claiming anything? That's sort of... And nobody across college football is really recognizing them. They're taking it for what it is. It's a school claiming something that, you know, is probably not theirs, but they want to go out there and bring some attention to themselves.
Right.
And he keeps giving them attention, so they keep running with it. The second thing is I think it's hypocritical because Alabama has more self-proclaimed national championships than anybody in the country. They've got four or five or even six if you go back and look at some of them because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And Alabama was gifted with an opportunity to play in the playoffs by the committee. So I don't – it to me, it just reeks of just a bad – like, come on. Like, just be better than that, Nick Saban.
This was therapeutic for you this morning?
Yes. Yeah, got that off
that.
My
yes,
chest.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
My timeline's been lit.
I'm going to leave it, too, because for every reason that you just stated, like, look, it's UCF. They went undefeated. Like, let them have that and enjoy it and do what they want to do with it. And then secondly, like, when we were coming up, before they had this, you know, this bowl championship series, like, there were a lot of seasons where two teams finished, like, undefeated or with one loss. And basically, like, you had to, like, it happened all the time where somebody claimed that they were a national champ, even if, like, I don't remember who was giving away the national champions back
right,
then,
right.
But you would say, like, Florida State got it, and Miami would be like, yeah, no, we're national champs, too.
Right.
Like, people did it.
Well, they had co-national champions.
Right, they had co-nationals, right. So, like, I'm leaving it all the way, too.
All right, leave that. Next up, take it or leave it. NBA teams should consider college coaches more in their search.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Especially now when the kids are younger. you know, the generationally things have changed a bit. You're talking about the social media era, and some of these NBA guys are long in the tooth. Some of them aren't, and they can adjust. But, you know, I think when you're dealing with a younger demo and they're going to be going to maybe potentially kids being able to come from high school again, you want guys that are used to dealing with them on the recruiting circuit, used to being around them, and you know, generally speaking, fresh and new, innovative ways to kind of play the game. Not that all NBA guys can't do that. A lot of them are very capable, but I'm sure there are a bunch of guys in college that are able to do that. Like Brad Stevens has been great, Billy Donovan, and there are all the stories like of Reggie Theus and Leonard Hamilton and Rick Pitino, who hasn't gotten it right. But those are older school guys, like guys who either played in the NBA and do it my way, or older coaches who are probably kind of stuck in their ways a little bit. Like some of these young progressive coaches, I think you should take a look at a few more of them. Doesn't mean they're always going to be right, but right. You should be looking.
Because I think there's still, the jury's still out on Billy Donovan at Oklahoma. I don't, from some of the stuff you read coming out of there,
yeah.
There might be a little bit of a disconnect between him and Russell Westbrook and the rest of that locker room. I would say this, and I'm curious to know Debo's take on this. Because if I'm the Sixers and I'm looking at what Brad Stevens did with his squad and yep. looking at the way the playoffs played out with Brett Brown, I would be calling up Jay Wright. And so Debo looked at me and was like, you're crazy. This was a couple months ago. Debo, are you still in the same boat?
I'm still looking at you the same way.
But I feel like Jay Wright's the only guy you could call as the Sixers and say, this would be potentially better to help get us to that next level.
Yeah, I think you're right in that if there was a guy that the Sixers could look okay calling to replace Brett Brown, it would be Jay Wright, especially in Philly at this point. Like, he would be the guy where people would be like, we'd hate to see Brett Brown go, but
right.
you're getting Jay.
Exactly.
But I want to reiterate that I've said it before. Like, I think Brett Brown is a fantastic coach, and I think he deserves the right. I think he did a great job with that team this year. They fell short in the playoffs. But some of that, like, it was his first time around the block, too. And a lot of those guys, it was their first time around the block. So I'm going to give them, you know, a little bit of learning, you know, a little bit of time to learn. And, you know, he stayed through a lot of lean years there in Philly. Now you've given him some talent. Give him a minute to really make that judgment on whether he can or cannot.
All right, next up, take it or leave it. Trae Young is going to bring back Puma.
Leave that.
As a basketball brand. You ain't having it?
Leave
He's going
that.
To be a top 10 pick. Love it. He was leading four in college basketball.
And it's got leave that.
He could be the next Steph Curry.
It's got, I don't care who he is. It's got nothing to do with.
So this is more about Puma.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with Trae Young. It's got to do with.
Like Pumas? I got Pumas in the.
I love Pumas. I love Pumas. As a basketball brand, they've never really been there. Like Ralph Sampson wore Pumas way back in the day.
Under Armour wasn't there before Steph.
Yeah.
They're taken way more seriously now.
They are, but Under Armour and Puma may have this like grassroots campaign that they're going to roll out. Under Armour started hitting like before Steph.
Yeah.
Like, Under Armour was out at all the top 100 camps I went to when I was like in the coaching program at the NBA. They had all the AAU events. Like, they've had a real grassroots, like, let's get in with these, you know, 10, 11, 12 year old kids. So by the time they're in high school and college, they want to wear Under Armour. And then Steph kind of fell into their lap. I don't know that Puma is going to like hit the scene as an NBA brand. I think Trae Young's going to be fantastic. I love Pumas. I just don't see him as being like, he's not going to change their perception as a basketball brand.
They haven't had anybody in a long time. The last NBA athlete they had was 1998 with Vince Carter. He only made it through 2 years of the 10-year deal that they gave him. I thought that money was guaranteed. No.
Was that after and one? What year was that?
1990. Yeah. Well,
no.
Right around the thick of it. Because
98 would have been before and
yeah,
one.
Yeah, before and one's.
Yeah. Around.
So they have Ricky Fowler now. They've been big in the golf community. I just hope they bring out some new kicks because I like their stuff.
Do you like Ricky Fowler's high-top golf shoes?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I don't think they're all right. Like, I like them the same as the guys that are going out there. Like, you were saying, the guy with the Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's equivalent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jordan, if you're a Jordan brand guy, though, in the PG, like, you're the one cool golfer. Like,
you. What is that guy's name? It's Keegan Bradley.
Keegan Bradley definitely has
him. It's a black dude. His name is
not Tony Finau, the guy who broke his ankle.
No. He's Nike.
Right.
This kid is like
it's Jordan brand.
Yeah, Tony Finau's like it looks like he's Pacific, like
right.
Islander or something like that.
Oh, is it
like
Varner?
Like
Harold Varner?
That's his name.
Yeah.
That's his name. Yeah.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
All right, sweet. So it's kind of sad that I could narrow it down. Yeah. Tells you a lot about the PGA.
That's it. Yeah, he's like a top 10 at the PGA, wasn't he?
Yeah. All right, next up.
Players.
Next up, take it or leave it. The Dodgers are done. They've been atrocious this season. Marlins actually had a better record than them for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
17-26, they were swept in a four-game series of the weekend by the Reds, who were the worst team in Major League Baseball. I'm going to say yes, they are done. And I was totally wrong about this team coming into the season. Because I like sometimes picking the team that came up short.
Right.
When they lost to the Astros, like, they get that taste of the World Series, like what it's like. They come back hungry. But I could not have been more wrong. They've been decimated by injuries. Henley Jansen, their closer, has like lost like 7 miles inexplicably on his closer. Like, it just somehow happens. I don't know if maybe he got tested and he stopped. I don't know how that happens.
Right.
But it's been a very real issue for him.
I'm going to take it. I think that's a wrap. When you lose, you're swept in a four-game series by the worst team in the National League, by the Reds, and then you come into to Marlins, and I don't follow baseball like that, but the Marlins, I hear all the time about, you know, what they've done, and you come in here and you lose them. They lost six straight. It just speaks, like, when you're on teams like that mentally, like, it's not a physical thing.
Right.
It's a mental thing. Like, yep. There's just a cloud. There's some kind of funk. I'm gonna say there, it's a wrap for the Dodgers.
All right, last one. Take it or leave it. Robinson Cano's Hall of Fame candidacy is done.
Yeah, take that.
I'm taking that all day. So he was just announced he was suspended for 80 games by Major League Baseball for violating their substance abuse policy. No player before that's been suspended has ever made it to a Hall of Fame. Manny Ramirez failed twice to get in. A-Rod, even as good as a career he had, he's not going to get in. Until they announce all the guys are
right,
available,
correct.
Like, that's the only way they're going to do it. And for Robinson Cano, I'm sorry. Like, you have to be – like, he came out with some excuse that he was prescribed a medication by a doctor in the Dominican Republic. You are so educated in Major League Baseball by your own teams, like, you know what you can and can't do. If you did have a doctor prescribe it, you should be aware enough with the type of money that's at stake to check with a doctor,
correct.
The team doctor on your team. This, but to me, it's not even about him not being smart. I think he was busted.
Yeah, look,
35. He's getting up there. He's probably looking at a way to extend the success that he's had, his stat line, keep it up there. So he's done for the Hall of Fame,
no doubt.
Until they do something else, it's about that time to make some money.
Yeah,
people out there, picks and props. Debo comes up with these, some sports related, some non sports related, but we'll see. So how are we doing, Debo? What do you got?
Picks and props.
We're good. We're going to get to the royal wedding. You better believe that. But first, we're going to start with horse racing. We don't know what the conditions are going to be at tomorrow's Preakness. They were sloppy and rainy for the Kentucky Derby. Can Justify win the second leg of the Triple Crown?
I'm really invested in this.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm
like, just, literally
I have no idea. I did watch the Derby. He looked dominant. He's like a big, huge horse. Like, he looks like a specimen. He actually, one of those things where I know nothing about horses, but you can look at that one and say, oh, this guy's physically more dominant. I think he does.
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah. And I think it's going to be sloppy in New York, too. My wife and them are up there. We're traveling to play in a basketball tournament up there, and it's supposed to be wet and rainy all weekend. And if I remember what happened in the Kentucky Derby, he looked strong. I'm going to go with that, too.
He looked real strong. Boom.
Next up, Danny, you alluded to it. You said this is one of your best bets in a while. The Cavaliers are favored by 6 points right now over the Celtics in tomorrow's game 3. Too much to cover? What do you got?
No, I'm locking that down. Take it. Take it to the bank. That's going to be my lock of the weekend. I think Cavs, I think they go back. I think LeBron has extended rest. Anytime he's had even 2 days of rest, he's looked much better. It's going to go a long way for him. I think the role players playing at home, I think they're going to play better because they've been atrocious, haven't given LeBron much support. I think this is the desperation game for the Cavs.
I think you are correct. I think the Celtics are going to look a lot better than they've looked on the road at times in the playoffs, but you hit two things. Role players playing better at home, and LeBron on the extended rest is a mofo. So I'm going to go with you.
Wow. Yeah. Usually when you...
I know. I was very, very aware of that, but I think you're right this time. I want to go with you.
What's next?
Go with Sunday's game, the Warriors-Rockets game 3. We know Kevin Durant, 15-0 in home games since he joined the Warriors. They're favored by 7 over the Rockets after being beat by double digits in their last game. Is that one too much?
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much.
Really?
I don't know that the Rockets are going to beat them in game 3. I'm not predicting that, but I do think it's going to be a better game. You've had two relative blowouts, like the big swings in scores, and I think this one's going to be a tight one. I think it's going to come down to the wire. I think Golden State's probably going to beat them, but I think it could be under 7.
I think this – I'm going to take the Warriors cover. I think they actually do win by 7 or more. I think going back home – I think Steph Curry, again, the rest similar to LeBron with the injuries he's had will help him. He's due for a breakout game. We talked about his lack of three-point success he's had. I think playing an Oracle sees it a little bit better, feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the Warriors to cover on that one.
So we know that the Vegas Golden Knights are now both Danny and Raja's Vegas Golden Knights.
Nice. Right. There's room for both of us on this.
A room on the bandwagon. The Knights, slight favorites tonight, minus 25 to win over the Jets. They could go up 3-1. Do they get it done in that arena that they've had so much success in?
No doubt. No doubt. Like, look,
with confidence.
Correct.
I like it.
No doubt. I love the fact that the fan base was asked not to sell the tickets on the secondary market. And so there's a true home ice advantage.
Yes.
I'm riding with the Golden Knights.
I think at home, too. I think the home ice, I think, is going to be a huge factor. And all the Vegas flu factor.
Yeah.
The longer they've been there, they're going to be more likely. And
in the playoffs, though?
Yeah. Oh, in the playoffs, it doesn't matter. Like, if guys are going out, they're going out. Like, if that's
true.
Your routine, like, true. Why would you slow down? Just keep doing what you always do. So I'm going to say, yeah, the Vegas flu is still in force. I think they take the commanding 3-1 lead in the series. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to test your hip-hop culture knowledge here. Houston Rockets have had some rap stars on their sidelines for the first two games of the series, Travis Scott and Lil Wayne. Here's the deal. If they played in a one-on-one game to 21, who would win? I have Travis Scott minus 5.5. Some details for you. Scott, 9 years younger and 5 inches taller. Lil Wayne, just 5'5".
I'm going to say this is dominated by Travis Scott. Lil Wayne, so he's little, all right? So he's tiny.
Yeah.
But he also, have you ever heard him talk? Like, he can't breathe. I think he's, I don't think he's cardiovascular.
He doesn't have lungs
out there.
No,
yeah,
lungs.
So I think Travis Scott would run circles around him.
That's fantastic. No background for either one of them, like, athletically?
Yeah,
did anyone play middle school ball? Or
Lil Wayne's 35. He's getting up.
I'll go with you. Yeah, look, from what I have to work with here, I'll go Travis Scott too. Although he doesn't strike me as the most athletic dude in the world, but 5 inches and 9 years, that's a lot to overcome.
Yeah,
any Kardashian / Jenner curse there?
I'm not touching that. Where's Hannah?
Yeah,
Hannah's not here today.
Exactly. Miss Hannah. We'll move on. Hard Knocks, it was announced yesterday, the Cleveland Browns, the 0-16 Cleveland Browns, will be featured on this season's edition of Hard Knocks. So the prop here, number of shots of Lake Erie they showed during the HBO show, or number of shots they show of Baker Mayfield putting that bandana, that famous bandana, on his head.
He needs to lose the thing, first of all, but I don't think he is.
You don't think he's going to fly in the NBA, the bandana?
No, he's I don't think it will. He's making it his thing.
But it's
and
not.
I don't love it. I think it'll be, can I take equal to? Because I think they're both going to be in the opening montage when they show them. I think they're going to have the Lake Erie, like that's going to be part of the montage. And then there probably will be the slow motion as Baker's putting it on, like tying it and giving you a look like the gamer look. Like that's absolutely going to be in the home, like the opening montage.
Why would you let Hard Knocks, no disrespect to Hard Knocks.
No,
like,
I don't.
Why would you?
I'm not 100% sure.
Did you have a say?
I think you have to do it. And there's a criteria, like you can't be a playoff team. The Browns, they can't get out that way. You have to have, if you were in it in the last 10 years, you can get out of it.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have any of these excuses, I think you're pretty much screwed.
GM, John Dorsey, was very much against it. But like you said, Danny, I think it could only be like 4 or 5 teams this year, and the Browns actually probably the most enticing out of all.
Yeah, the only other team that was available that I thought would have been interesting was the 49ers.
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
But other than that, like, it doesn't bring a whole lot of interest. So I think it's going to be actually pretty good. Well, I'll watch it.
Yeah, sure.
And it's a really cool show. Like, I think it is a really accurate glimpse of reality.
I love the show. Yeah. I don't love the effect that it has on the teams that participate
in
it.
Everyone's going to act different.
I'm going to go with Lake Erie. I'll go with Lake Erie.
When you guys had guys mic'd up, you would always let each other know, right?
Yeah, at some point. Like, you'd forget that you had the mic on.
Yes.
And then at some point, you'd be like, oh, shoot, right. I got this mic on. One year, we had Jack McCollum. He wrote the book, like, 7 seconds or less. And the book was good. I read it a couple times. It was a good book. But what happened was Jack just kind of became a fixture. Like, he was just like a regular coach. So initially, it was like, look, this is Jack McCollum. He writes for such and such. Like, he's going to be with us this year. And you were very cognizant of the fact that he was there. And so you were kind of guarded a little bit. You didn't want – and then it just became natural for him to be there. And so people started letting guard down, and he started getting privy to a lot of information.
Right.
And then, you know, there were times where you read in the book, and you were like, Jesus. Like,
I can't believe that came out.
Raj, I've read that book probably like 10 years ago. I've been meaning to like read it back since I've met you and like learn some stories. I think it would be interesting to read back.
Yeah, there's some.
Maybe have a book club on the podcast.
All right, what else you got for us?
Next up, Mo Bamba, one of the most impressive wingspans in NBA combine history. Actually, the largest wingspan in NBA history. 7'10". That's 92 inches. The prop here, Mo Bamba's wingspan in inches versus games that Luka Doncic plays in the NBA in 2018-2019. Luka saying after the Kings got number two when the Suns got number one, I'm not sure if these are my last two games in the EuroLeague. We have yet to make a decision, perhaps after the season, maybe trying to avoid being placed with those franchises.
That's tough. I'm going to say that Mo Bamba's wingspan...
Sorry, Mo Bamba's wingspan minus 20.
So Luka would have to play
72 games.
72. Yeah, I'm going to say Mo Bamba's wingspan. I'm not so sure that Luka doesn't come over, but I could see a rookie missing 10 games for various injuries and so on and so forth.
Do you think he plays in the end? Do you think he's actually has it in him to sit out?
No.
Because that's kind of what he was alluding to, right? Yes. He would just take the pass, the opportunity.
But I don't – look, here's the deal. Like, if you – well, I guess then if he scares them away, the Kings don't draft him.
Right.
And I don't know. Bill Duffy is his agent. I think I saw Bill Duffy put out a quote and say Luka's not said anything. Bill Duffy came out and said Luka has not had any opinion on any NBA team. So when he's doing that, I think that the kid's going to come over and play for whoever drafts him.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right. Did you guys see the story where an apparent Hurricane Harvey relief victim?
Yes.
He enrolled in a Dallas area high school. Okay. The problem is he was 25 years old and started playing for their basketball team and was pretty good, as you would expect someone that's 25 years old and at least seven years older than the rest of the guys to be. The prop here, how many points you would score in a high school game if you played today at your current state, at your current physical state, current age, minus 8 versus Dante DiVincenzo's vertical jump that he put together at yesterday's combine, the big ragu, 42 inches, leading everyone. Raja, that's better than you. You had 41?
No, I went 40. I went 40. Yeah, 42 is a number.
That is.
Dante, 42. So what you got here?
Ooh, minus 8. So I'd score 34. Or I'd score 35.
34, right?
No, you would have to score 50.
Oh, I'm minus 8.
Other way.
Nope. Games are short. Games are short.
If you just took over and was like, I'm going to show these boys what's up.
I mean, but you're factoring in like minutes. My current, like my right now physical, like I've got
no
you're wind.
In good shape.
I'm in better shape, but I got no wind. I'd have to run. I'd eventually, my legs would be out, like if you did it right now. So Dante, for sure.
I thought mine was 8. I thought it was going to be for me, just 8 points. I get 8. I would hope
jumpers.
I could get 8. I'm getting 8 for sure. All right. The crazy thing about it, I think he enrolled as a freshman, which is weird. Like, sneak in as a senior, but I guess if you're going in, like, you're going all in.
Why not?
Like, try not to get 4 years out of it. The other thing was at Permian High School, which is actually the basis for Friday Night Lights, the football movie.
Really?
With Booby. Remember all those dudes?
So
that was the actual high school. I thought it was Permian. No?
I'll buy it.
I'm pretty sure it was. Maybe we'll have to have our research department check that out.
There was a kid from Florida that did this somewhere else probably about 10 years ago. Same situation.
Yeah.
My thing is...
Was he 25?
The kid from Florida?
Was it that much older?
No, I don't think he was 25. I think he was early
20s. 21,
like fresh out of school and then tried to re-enroll in another state. Yeah, that's just crazy. Like, if you're not getting 40 a game, you should have been, like, the player of the year. That's how they should have found out. You were, like, the player of the year at 25 years old playing.
So average is how he actually pulled it off. He wasn't any good. All right.
Our final pick and prop. This is one where we definitely miss Hannah. I don't know what your weekend plans are, Raja. I know you're going up to New York. How early are you going to wake up on Saturday for the royal hashtag royal wedding? And the prop here, what color do you think the queen's hat will be?
Ooh.
Like white?
Yeah, well, that's not the favorite. So cream and ivory is the favorite at 3-1.
Let's make that.
Blue is 4-1. White, same as blue. So that's the second favorite. So white is 4-1. Green, 5-1. Silver, 7-1. A long shot.
Brown at 50-1. What about the U value there?
The Union Jack one is my favorite. 101. If she comes out there wearing
Jack.
The Union Jack hat, that would be hilarious if she did it. I don't know, like... What's his name, Prince Harry? He likes to get after it a little bit, have some fun. It could be at the host party.
Yeah.
Break out the Union Jack hat and put it on her.
Well,
I'm going to go with white.
You're going with white? I'll go with cream.
I'm going with white. If you're going to watch it,
When does it start?
Saturday morning. It comes on live.
I will not watch that.
I won't either because I'll be caddying, but I will watch the replay. HBO is actually having Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon from SNL.
Yeah.
Like do this skit where they're going to do it live, but they're playing it in character.
Yeah.
Like, as the cheesy TV anchors.
Oh my God.
So I can't like that's okay. That's what I'll
that's
watch.
How you'll watch
that'll
it.
That'll be
perfect. Right. I want to say it's 4 a.m.
No.
Well, I thought it started at 6:30 a.m. Like, I thought it was
well,
six.
You got to get all the lead.
Oh, you got to get the red carpet and do all that? Yeah. All right. Let's do a little player's perspective.
Player's perspective.
Because one of the things that's been really evident, especially in the NHL, I mentioned the home ice,
yeah,
was playing at home. You know, the Capitals have on the road are 10-5. Caps at home are 3-5. This one's a little bit mind-boggling because usually you think you would be stronger playing at home.
Yeah.
You've often talked about the role players playing better at home. That's why I'm picking the Cavs and the Warriors to cover this weekend. Do you think it makes that much of a difference?
I do. I think.
And how do you explain the Caps being better on the road? I'll tell you what my theory is.
Please tell me.
Because they've had their postseason woes, right, where they've been bad in the postseason. They've had this curse on them. So I think at home they feel a little bit of that tension and pressure from the fan base when they go on the road. And this would probably be similar to what I experienced in my career because there would always be boos. You know, if you threw an interception and be like, hey, get him out of there. And you start to hear that. We're on the road. I almost felt like I was better if everybody hated me for a different reason. Like, but they, like I felt better in that role. I don't know if my stats put it out or not. But.
So there, I agree with you. What the only thing that I have to compare it to –
So we did have numbers. I was so much better. That completes a percentage. Debo, you're fired, man. We are not putting up
that's so fantastic, Debo.
On the board. Debo's fired from ever.
Do you have mine? Debo, do you have mine?
So I was clearly way more accurate.
Rajo on the road at home. I was marginally better at home. Yeah,
Raja, you were 5% worse from the free throw line. I think that's the only noticeable discrepancy.
On the road?
Is that an actual factor? Yeah, you were 5% worse on the road at the free throw line.
Yeah, I'd hate to give the fans credit for that, but maybe.
I think it's more like just the different look behind the basket. Yeah, there's different, you know, depth stuff.
There definitely is. There's something to be said for like your home. But look, I had a situation and to the point you were making about the pressure you feel when I got traded to Charlotte. It was the first time I really felt it. I wasn't really happy to have gotten traded to Charlotte at the time. And I didn't come out of the gates playing well because I was sulking a little bit and I didn't want to be there. And quickly, the fans could kind of feel that. And I wasn't performing, so I could feel their frustration with me. And so it became hard for me to get over that hump of the trade at home. And I want to say, I don't think he's got the stats for this, but I started hitting my stride with Charlotte in road games. Mm-hmm. And I started getting comfortable with my teammates, letting my guard down a little bit and realizing that I was going to be fine here in Charlotte. And then it started to translate a little bit back to the home court. But initially, I felt that pressure too at home. It was all my fault because I started it. But the fact was they were impatient. They wanted me to play better, and it was hard for me to do at home.
Yeah, no doubt.
Five-star Q&A.
All right. It's Friday, so you know what time it is. It's time to do our five-star Q&A.
Let's get it.
If you're out there and you're listening, you're wondering how you can listen to us, go to iTunes, subscribe. When you're there, they'll ask you to leave a review. 5 stars. And in the review section, ask us a question. Ask us anything. This is kind of like where we like to go off the rails a little bit, have some fun, get to know us on a different level. All right, so first up, from The Hager, H-E-G-E-R. You pronounce it. I don't know how it goes. They say having larger hands in basketball and football is a huge advantage. What players did you play with or against that had smaller hands but were still stars? Besides Kobe coming in here.
Besides Kobe. Kobe had small hands? I don't know. It might have been a joke.
I think it was.
I don't know. I never really looked at my opponent's hands.
I'm with you.
But I'll tell you what. When I was in the front office with Cleveland, Tristan Thompson has small hands. And he's not like a star, so I don't know. But this is the only thing that I can draw on. Tristan had small hands. And like when I got there, people in the front office would tell me that Tristan he didn't finish great around the rim. Like he wasn't a great finisher. And some of that had to do with the fact that a lot of the times he had to go up with both hands with that ball to protect it because he couldn't hold it with one. And so it would make it vulnerable to deflections or blocks and so on and so forth. So you could see the effect that it had on his ability to finish around the rim because his hands were smaller.
I think, yes, it's an advantage if you have them, but there's exceptions to every rule. I would not, if I had seen a guy on film perform to a high level and throw a football or shoot a basketball, I could care less what size his hand was.
Yeah.
You know, like if the guy's shown me he can do it at a competitive level and succeed, I'm not going to hold it against
it.
It's
not an issue.
Say, oh, well, maybe it doesn't translate. No, yeah. I think it's one of the most over-evaluated things.
The case has also been made for guys like Shaq and those guys' hands being too big.
Right,
that's why they can't shoot free throws.
Yeah, exactly.
Like shooting like a pool cue, like
right,
a pool ball.
Or a golf ball.
Right.
All right. Next up from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's a lot of fives.
A lot of fives?
Yeah. Danny, explain how the history over the last 12 years of Alabama football, the Dolphins, and the Saints changed over a shoulder diagnosis. What can you tell us? So I know exactly what this is about. So my dad was a team doctor for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
When Drew Brees Dante Culpepper were free agents, they both were coming off significant injuries.
Yeah.
Dante Culpepper, an ACL injury. Drew Brees from a torn labrum surgery that he had. So my dad was obviously part of the medical evaluation. Yeah. So he did take a look at both these guys, took the information to Nick Saban, who was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and said, hey, you can either have they're both going to be okay.
Yep.
But you can have one who's going to probably be a little bit slow while he's trying to run for a part of the season. And you're going to have one who's probably going to be a little bit limited in the throws that he can make in his first season.
Yep.
But eventually they'll probably both be fine. And this was sort of the diagnosis that he not only got from my dad, but from James Andrews,
yep,
you know, the world-renowned surgeon. So it wasn't, you know, a blockbuster one. So Nick Saban was like, well, why would I want to – the quarterback throws the ball. Why I would probably go with the one whose legs, because he can still throw the ball and still run the offense.
Right.
So they ended up signing Dante Culpepper. Drew Brees goes to the Saints, brings them a Super Bowl. Nick Saban gets canned because Dante Culpepper was a bust, goes to Alabama, and that's how the history has changed from a medical diagnosis of the Miami Dolphins.
So what you're saying, though, is like Alabama fans, in all their – they should
me.
Be thanking you.
Yes.
Correct.
They should be thanking me for sending Nick Saban their
Correct.
Way. That's what I think the real message
Correct.
Of this
that
podcast
was what it
should
was.
Be. All right, so we settled that one. All right, next up from Gulp BS.
Gulp BS.
Yeah,
okay.
I always make fun of Hannah for not being able to pronounce these. They're not exactly easy. All right, so from Gulp BS, just had a baby boy, Noah, 6 months ago.
Congrats.
How young is too young to start him on a path to the NFL draft? You both have kids that seem to love sports. How do I make sure that is the case with him as well?
Oh, you might be asking the wrong one. I don't know. I don't think, look.
Massage his hamstrings
yes.
now with, like, tiger's milk.
Start stretching him from yes. his crib, putting him on a rack, start getting yes. him longer. You know, I don't know how young is too young to start, like, having him enjoy sports and having a ball and just, you know, my baby girl, my only girl, is, like, 1.5 years old, and she loves to run around and grab the basketballs that her brothers are playing with and kick a soccer ball. And if the balls are just around at that age and they have it, like, if they take to them, like right. it's great. And then, you know,
6 months old,
you can so start you put, training them so when they're like two.
Put a cone drill and you have like snacks that are right next to the
yeah.
cone drill and have them going back and forth. I would say don't stress it at this age.
Yeah, man.
Like, but like my dad often, I asked him, like, did you do anything different with him? And he was same with you. Like, yeah, you had toys, which are essentially balls
right.
nowadays, and you kind of have them playing, have them available so they can go there. And if you love sports, your kid probably will do.
Sports.
And if your kid doesn't love sports, that's okay too. Like,
yeah.
don't try to push it on them, force it on them. I think that's what can turn off a lot of kids.
Better message. I think your better message was, dude, at 6 months old, yes. enjoy every moment of that.
Exactly.
It goes by quick.
All right. How about from Big Red Trella? Danny and Raja, we've seen great rivalries in sports. Tiger versus Phil, Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, Nadal versus Federer. Who were your biggest rivals growing up and as professionals?
Oh, my biggest rivals growing up. In high school, my biggest rival was I played at Miami Killian, and so there was a team, South Miami High School. It had Charlie Miller, who wound up going to Indiana. He was my class, much more highly heralded as a player, and for rightfully so. He was a man-child already, and so he went to Indiana, and they had another young kid named Lucas Barnes, who wound up playing at University of Miami, and like that was my biggest rival. We beat them my senior year to win our district, and Charlie was the leading scorer in the county. I was second leading scorer. Luke was third leading scorer. So there was a whole lot of a back and forth, but he would have been my biggest rival in high school. And as a pro, I didn't really have rivals. My job was one that, like, most scorers, two guards, would hate me just by the nature of my job, which was to go out there and try to make your life a living hell whenever I got the chance to do that. So I had a bunch of guys that probably just hated me.
So I would say, I don't know, in high school there were school rivalries that we had. I don't know
yeah.
if there was necessarily an individual guy that I had something with. In the pros, And in college, too, I would say a rival, but he's also a friend. It's one of those ones where you kind of keep an eye on how he's doing and you want to do better was Danny Werfel. Because we were friendly our senior years in high school, and we started talking through the recruiting process.
Right.
Hey, where are you going to go? What are you hearing? These types of things. I end up going to Florida State. He ends up going to Florida. So we're natural rivals there. So I would have, but I was always like, he started before me. So I was like, oh, man, he's getting his opportunity first. But then we played against each other. I got to beat him the first time we played against each other. I was like, yeah, I got him. But then he won the Heisman Trophy. Like it was, and then we got to the NFL and I started to have a little bit more success
with him.
But it was always one where you kind of.
It was a healthy rivalry.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's kind of pushing yourself
good.
To do that next thing. Last one from CB Morning. He's our guy. College mascots battling it out. Who's winning?
Oh.
Which mascot are you claiming? The Panthers?
Oh, you're talking about our.
I think
like,
it has to be.
Yeah.
I think it has to be college mascots. I think it's ours.
Nah, man, a Panther would destroy a Seminole.
I don't know. Are you sure? Panther. Chief Osceola ain't messing around.
Chief
He's got Renegade.
They wore
He's got
Panther.
Renegade so he can run around on
they
the
wore
horse.
Panther skins probably too, right?
Yes.
Depends on whether you were hunting Panther or if you were like in, like, yes.
Depends on what type of matchup. Like, do they get a weapon or are they just thrown in a pit?
Correct.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, I could go with the Boston University Terriers. It's a little terrier.
That would be third place in the college mascot. So, all right, you guys can tell us. Leave us in that five-star review. Tell us who wins in the college mascot
game.
Tell us there. As always, go follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kanell and Bell. Go subscribe on iTunes and anywhere else that their podcast. Make sure you find us. We're out there all over the place. Thanks for listening. Have a good Friday.